Hello, and welcome to our program, Comics, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Toni Morell, and during the next half hour, I will be reading the Dick Tracy comics here on OWL Radio. Dick Tracy, the blank. We have Dick Tracy in a bookstore reading the newspaper. To his friend, he's looking at the headlines and is saying, "Well, Junior, you're quite a hero since you identified that subpoena gangster. Your picture is all over the papers." Junior, one of the neighborhood kids who's inside the bookstore, says to Dick Tracy, "Thanks, Tracy. Oh, by the way, these are kids from my room at school." Dick Tracy, looking at the group, says, "They want to ask some questions?" Junior, "Yes, Mr. Tracy. Why is it that fellows, well, like Johnny Mitworth, get mixed up in crime and lose their lives?" Dick Tracy, looking seriously at the youngster, says, "Johnny Mitworth paid the price for living a loose, careless life. He made his first mistake when he kept company with a girl who was a perfume thief. He thought she was cute." And pointing his finger at the group of young tykes, Dick Tracy says, "That little beginning was his downfall. He realized he had paid his debt to society before he died, and he died happily. Little crimes lead to big ones. Crime not only doesn't pay, but it can't pay. It has the world against it. Remember that, boys." And now he's in the hospital visiting a friend. Well, not really a friend. I think it's somebody that he helped get arrested. This individual, looking at Dick Tracy as another man is quickly writing down everything the man is saying, says, "That's all I have to say, gentlemen. I did it alone. I poisoned her." Dick Tracy, taking what his colleague was writing down, hands the notepad to the man and says, "Just put your signature there, subpoena. Your confession completely clears up Mrs. Mitworth's murder." And subpoena, struggling to speak, says, "I had a great future when I was young, but I thought I was smart. And in the middle of signing his name, subpoena's hand goes limp. Dick Tracy and the doctor look at each other in disbelief. Now, over at the gangster's room, one of the gangsters reading the newspaper, headlines, "Subpoena gangster identified by youngster." The gangster says, "That little rat." All of a sudden, he hears the key in the doorknob rattling. With cigarette in his mouth, he yells out, "Hello, that you, Bart?" Bart, opening the door, says, "I found out where the kid lives." The gangster, "Yeah, good." The guy who found the kid says, "He lives over on Palm Avenue, goes to Austin School." The gangster, looking at his other buddy, says, "Okay, get the car. We'll run him down as he comes from school, the little." And the other one says, "Now hold your horses, Neely. Listen, this thing has several angles." Now in the car, they see Junior crossing the street. Neely, driving the car, says, "Aha! There he is. I'll teach him to go around putting his finger on people." His colleague say, "No, no, please, Neely, listen to reason." And as Neely drives the car straight to the kid, his colleague grabbing the steering wheel, "Are you crazy, man? Let's figure this thing out better." And swoosh, it goes right by Junior the youngster. Junior, not knowing what almost happened, looks at the car speeding off and says, "Well, of all the, why don't you watch out where you're driving, you big boob?" And as Neely regains control of the car, his colleague says to him, "I want to get even with the kid too, but let's not do anything, at least till we talk to Jerry." Neely, angrily driving the car, says, "But Jerry's in jail." Jerry in jail is in his cell, standing with one foot on his bed, looking out the window, saying, "A kid, a 10-year-old kid, puts the finger on me. If I could just get my mitts on him for one." And all of a sudden, the jail guard opens his jail cell door and says to Jerry, "Hey, bud, you've got a visitor up front." Jerry, walking out of his cell, goes to the screened window. The jail guard says, "Okay, 3 minutes." Neely is on the other side of the window. Jerry, getting down low and close, whispers through the screened partition, "Great Caesar, Neely. You had your nerve coming here. They're liable to recognize you." Neely, with his eyes going back and forth, making sure no one recognizes him, says, "I had to see you, Jerry. I got something on my mind." And now we have the scene, a street a few blocks from Junior Tracy's home. An auto accident has absorbed the interest of our young friend. He says, "What's wrong? What's happened?" And pointing his thumb over his shoulder to the driver in the car knocked out, he says, "That fella in the back seat just stepped in front of this man's car. He's badly hurt." Not knowing it's Neely driving the car, Junior gets in the front seat with him. Neely saying, "I didn't have a chance to stop. You were right across the street. You saw that, didn't you, son?" Junior in the front seat says, "Sure, he stepped right out in front of your car." Neely, stepping on the gas, "We'll take him to the hospital then. I'll make a report to the police, and I'd like you to be my witness." Junior, settling in the front seat next to Neely, not knowing what's about to happen, says, "Sure, I'll be your witness. It was his fault, all right." And slowly, the man who supposedly was hit begins to sit up in the back seat. Junior, completely unaware of what's happening, says to Neely, "What hospital are you going to take him to?" Neely, driving, glances over to Junior and says, "Hospital? Oh, yeah, let's see." And at that moment, the man, both hands on the back of the front seat where Junior is sitting, leans over and stares at Junior straight in the face. Junior, looking over his shoulder, "Oh, well, I'll be..." and staring at the man. He says to Neely, "Look, he's come too. Do you feel much better, mister? Do you feel any pain?" The gangster man says, "No, I don't feel any pain." Junior, looking at both of them quizzically, says, "What do you mean? You got struck by this car. This man's taking you to the hospital." The man in the back seat, putting his hat on his head, says, "Oh, no, he's not." Junior, looking at Neely, who's driving, points to the man in the back seat and says, But, isn't he hurt? Aren't you taking him to the hospital? Listen, you fellas, what is this?" And reaching over into the front seat, the man in the back grabs the back of Junior's jacket, pulls Junior into the back seat as Junior is going, and the man pulling him down to the back seat, "Pipe down, you little stool pigeon," and placing a handkerchief over Neely's nose. He says, "Infants that start out life by putting a finger on people have to be given a lesson, bud. Step on it, Neely." However, back at Junior Tracy's home, his mom, finishing washing the dishes, says, "Mercy, it's 4:30, and Junior isn't home. I wonder what's keeping him." She sits down to write her grocery list, with the canary singing very happily in the cage. "I'll fix up my grocery list. He'll have to go to the store as soon as he comes home. I suppose he's playing ball with the boys." And not knowing that her son has been kidnapped, the two gangster men have reached their destination. They roll Junior in a blanket in the back seat of the car. "Wrap him in the robe. We're going upstairs." And carrying him to make it look like they're carrying a rolled up piece of carpet, they get to the room at the top of the stairs, unroll it. "Okay, lock the door," says Neely. Junior, pulling the handkerchief down from over his mouth, leaning up on an elbow after having been tossed on the floor. "So you're part of the subpoena gang, are you? You crooks! Wait till Tracy gets on your trail." And all of a sudden, whap! One of the gangster guys whacks him in the face with the end of the towel. Junior, sitting there, stunned, hands over his face and his mouth. Neely says to him, "Lay down there and keep your mouth shut. When we want you to talk, we'll tell you." Back over at the police station, Dick Tracy is looking at a lineup. The phone rings. Bring! Tracy says, "Get that telephone, Pat. I want to stay here with the show up." Pat, looking at the ringing phone, says, "Okay." Junior's mother, talking into the phone, says, "Is he with you, Tracy, Pat? Is he with Tracy, Pat?" Pat going, "No, Mrs. Steele, he isn't here. I haven't seen Junior all day." Mrs. Steele, over the phone talking to Pat, "He hasn't been home since morning. Of course, he might have had to stay after school, but it's getting late." Pat, hanging up the phone, goes over to Dick Tracy and says, "Hey, Dick, step out here a minute." Junior, back in the gangster's car, hands tied behind him, tape over his mouth. There he is on the floorboard of the coop. Manned by Junior's captors, Junior lies on the floor. One of the gangsters says to Neely, "Are you sure, Neely, this is the thing to do?" Neely, "It's a cinch. This is a show-up night at headquarters, and Tracy won't be home till 11 o'clock. The gangster guy driving the car, "How do you know the car, the Dick, how do you know the Dick's car is in his garage? He's been using a squad car lately. It must be." Neely, "How long does take carbon monoxide to kill?" His gangster friend, "Oh, about 15 or 20 minutes. Pulling up to Dick Tracy's apartment, Neely says, "There's Tracy's apartment. Now circle the block a couple of times, then drive down the alley." Now remember, they've got Junior in the car with them, right there in the front seat. He's manipulating the pedals now, while the gangster's driving. And we hear the gangster say, "Hey, keep that kid's feet off the pedals. There, that'll hold him," as he smacks the kid. "Pull down the alley, Dirks." With Dirks sitting in the car with Junior, Neely gets out, looks in the garage, and says, "Yeah, the detective's car is inside. Okay, bring the kid out and let's get busy." And pulling the kid out by the scruff of his neck, not seeing that Junior has been able to wiggle the piece of tape over his mouth off, Neely says, "Okay, get that motor going while I fix the ropes." And at that moment, Junior bites down with full force into Neely's hand. Just as Neely is saying, "Turn around, kid, and don't try any..." "Ouch! Why, you little..." And he starts to pound on Junior. Dirks is trying to start the car, hotwire it as quickly as he can. And as Neely is fighting with Junior, we hear him say to Dirks, "How are you coming with that car?" Dirks, from under the hood, "This ignition's a little tricky, but I'll get it." And then, Dirks, "Aha! There she goes." And now, with Junior tied and completely bound, Neely grabs him and, as he's shoving him underneath the car, says, "All right, come on, let's get going." And shoving him under the car, right next to the exhaust, Neely says, "Underneath, little pal. Under you go." While the two fiends revel in their consummation of their grisly business, a strange dark shadow stands silently eyeing the proceedings through a garage window. Neely and Dirks are standing there watching the car's exhaust with Junior shoved underneath. Dirk says, "We better get out of here. The fumes are getting too strong." Neely, with a handkerchief over his mouth, says, "Okay, say, how about the gas supply?" Dirks, "I'll look." And then Jiminying it, he puts gas in the gas tank and says, "Ah, there's enough for at least 2 hours. Neely, "Let's go." And outside the door, as Dirks is closing it, Neely calls over his shoulder, "Shut that door tight." The dark figure who watches. What manner of man is he? And as Neely and Dirks walk away from the garage to their car, Neely says, "Come on, let's scram." And all of a sudden, the dark figure steps out from the shadows and says, "Don't move a single step, boys. Keep the hands high and turn around. I'm taking your guns first." Neely and Dirks look at each other, stare back at the man. Neely says, "It's the blank." And the man with no face says, "Yeah, boys, it's me." The stranger has entered the garage with the two gangsters and releases Junior. He says to Junior, "All right, son, I made them release you. I've saved your life. Now do as I say." Junior, "But I, that is," the man cuts him off, "take these ropes and tie their hands. I'm going to put them under the car where you were." Junior, standing there, staring at this strange man, "But if you gas them, that will be murder. No matter how rotten they are, I won't tie them and be a party to any killing." The man, "Oh, you won't, eh? You little fool. I'll tie them. They're going to get a little taste of carbon monoxide themselves. And how's I've waited for this chance." Junior, who's been tied up by this man with a handkerchief over his mouth, thinkingly says, "A man without a face? Who can he be?" And now with both men underneath the car, engine going full blast, the man says, "Well, gentlemen, there you are, neatly tucked away for a nice long rest. And now to make sure the motor doesn't stop." And the man revs the engine more as the fumes come sputtering out right into the gangster's face who are underneath the car. The man says, "Au revoir and farewell. The blank leaves you alone with your thoughts." And making sure that Junior walks in front of him, as they walk to the gangster car, the man says, "And you, my young friend, shall stay with me, at least until enough time has elapsed to let the auto fumes do their work." In the car, driving with Junior still tied up and the handkerchief over his mouth, the man says, "Now, buddy, you and I are going to just drive around for a while." And taking the handkerchief off Junior's mouth, he says, "And if you'll promise not to yell, I'll take the cloth off your mouth." Junior, looking at this strange man, says, "But who are you? And why did you want to gas those two men? That's murder." The man, looking at Junior while he's driving, says, "They were going to gas you, weren't they?" And Junior, not able to help himself, says, "And what's the matter with your face? You haven't any eyes or mouth or nose. The man straight ahead, driving, says, "Son, my full name, first, middle, and last, is The Blank. Yes, sir, The Blank. That's me. And listeners, we will continue that next time. Moving on to something a lot more lighter. Garfield by Jim Davis. We have cartoonist Jim Davis sitting at his drawing board with Garfield, his cat, sitting on the file cabinet next to him. Looking straight at the audience, Jim Davis has the character John Arbuckle say, "Hi there, I'm John Arbuckle. I'm a cartoonist. And this," as he points to Garfield, "is my cat, Garfield." Fat Garfield sits there as John Arbuckle smiles so proudly at him. Garfield thinkingly says, "Hi there, I'm Garfield. I'm a cat. And this is my cartoonist, John." John, looking straight at the audience, "Our only thought is to entertain you." Garfield, looking at John, thinkingly says, "Feed me." John looks at Garfield and says, "Happy birthday, Garfield. I have a little surprise for you." And taking his hands out from behind his back, he puts the present on the table in front of Garfield. A rubber mousie! Garfield plops it in his mouth. And as he's eating it, says, "Could have used a little salt." Garfield is standing next to the hassock in the living room. A mouse scampers by. John yells, "A mouse! Get it!" Garfield looks up and looks around. John goes, "Garfield, you didn't even try." Garfield, resting his cat chin atop of his cat paws, says, "Show me a good mouser, and I'll show you a cat with bad breath." Jonathan and Garfield are sitting at the dining room table. John has a delicious steak in front of him, just waiting to be eaten by him. Jonathan hands a plate with just a little teeny tiny bit of cat food on it to Garfield and says, "I'm putting you on a diet, Garfield. Here's your dinner." All of a sudden, Garfield has this look of complete aghast on his face and pointing the opposite way in front of John. John yanks his head around and goes, "What?" Only to see, when he looks back, the steak is in Garfield's mouth as Garfield is happily chowing down on it, and as Garfield is pushing his plate with the little bit of cat food towards John. Garfield is sleeping so happily on top of the television set with a happy, silly cat smile on his face. "Ah," says Garfield as he stretches out on the television set. And then curling his tail around him, he goes, "Happiness is a warm television set." Jonathan walks by and sees Garfield slapping a cat burger across the table. Garfield jumps up on the table, runs after it, and slaps it again. And then pouncing on it one more time, only to have John say, "Don't be cruel, Garfield. Put the cat burger out of its misery and eat it. You've been listening to Comics and Al Radio. You can listen to Al Radio on specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. And you may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.alradio.org. Thank you for listening. This is Tony Morell saying goodbye from Al Radio.